You have your Bible, please turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 1, continuing today in our study in 2 Corinthians. Many years ago, William Shakespeare wrote a famous play called Much Ado About Nothing. It's a romantic comedy in which different couples have various misunderstandings, they fall in love, they fall out of love, they get back in love, and at the end of the play, the main couples are married, and everyone lives happily ever after. Well, you know, trouble in the church can sometimes be described as much ado about nothing. I think we've probably all seen examples of how people sometimes make mountains out of molehills. That is, they focus on trivial issues and expand minor misunderstandings way out of proportion. Something that should be a minor irritant for some people turns into a major issue. That seems to be what's happening in the relationship between Paul and the church at Corinth. In today's text, Paul has to explain himself and his behavior to these people who took issue to the fact that he had changed his plans. Over in 1 Corinthians 16, Paul talks about the fact that he wants to visit the Corinthians on his way to Macedonia. Now, Corinth is situated between Achaia in the south of Greece and Macedonia in the north. And Corinth is situated on this little 4-mile-wide land bridge between the south and the north. And so Paul says he wants to come and winter with the people there in Corinth and then go on to Macedonia. But then he changed his plans, and now what he wants to do is stop in Corinth briefly on his way to Macedonia, spend some time in Macedonia, then on his way out, spend a few more days in Corinth before heading back to Judea. So this has been a change in plans. And as you read the commentaries on this passage, it seems as if no one is actually sure what Paul ended up doing, whether he spent time there at Corinth, how much time he spent, what itinerary or what agenda he actually did. There's some disagreement about the actual comings and goings. But what seems pretty obvious is that the people in Corinth were upset about the fact that Paul had changed his plans. Now, I'm calling that much ado about nothing because, frankly, the change of plans is not that big of a deal. I mean, how many of us don't change our plans from time to time? But the people there at Corinth took great issue with that. They began accusing Paul then of being unreliable and unstable. Because he changed his plans too often, he was not trustworthy. He was fickle. He said one thing and did something else. In fact, his yes meant no and his no meant yes. And if Paul is unreliable in keeping his plans, making plans and keeping them, well, maybe then Paul is just unreliable in what he said. Perhaps he has a bad character. Perhaps, in fact, he's a liar. And it seems like there were at least a few people in the church there who were making some very extreme accusations against Paul. You know, it's remarkable that this kind of criticism is coming from a church that Paul himself started. Paul had been there in Corinth for a year and a half. He had planted, started the church, taught there. He knew the people well. They knew him. And yet, over these rather small, insignificant issues, they come to make these huge accusations against him. Instead of trusting him and giving him the benefit of the doubt, they were critical and even hostile against him. He says in chapter 12, "The more abundantly I love you, the less I be loved." So it seems as if Paul is working with these people, he's trying to do his best with these people, and yet any little thing that he does, they take issue with it. They come across as very critical, very fault-finding against Paul. Churches sometimes make small issues into big problems. They allow minor, trivial misunderstandings to sour their relationships. Church members sometimes get all upset with a pastor or with other church members over rather minor, trivial, and insignificant things. And in extreme cases, this can lead to the weakness and even the destruction of the church. And so Paul takes time here at the beginning of the book to explain himself and why he had to make these changes in plans. He's not unreliable. He's not fickle. He has to respond here to these criticisms to show that what he did was right and good and, in fact, for the benefit of the people there at Corinth. He has to defend himself, and that's what he's doing. And so I think what we have here is kind of a pattern of how to respond to criticisms over minor, trivial issues. And unfortunately, sometimes in the church, minor trivial things come up and people take issue, people become fault-finding and critical, and we need to know how to defend ourselves or how to respond, how to deal with these critical things that come up over minor issues. So let's see what the text here tells us about how to deal with minor trivial issues. First of all, recognize good intentions. Notice chapter 1, verse 15. He says, in this confidence, I intended to come to you before that you might have a second benefit. And then in verse 17, therefore, when I was planning this, so he talks about his intentions and his plans. And so if we're dealing with these minor insignificant things, we should first of all take into account that people are making plans, they have intentions, and these are made in good faith. People are trying to make plans for good reasons. Typically, when you and I make plans, we are doing it for good reasons. And even if we have to change our plans, there's usually good reasons to do so. Now, I know that evil people make plans to do evil things as well. We see that all around us. Even in the political situation today, there are evil people who make evil plans. But when it comes to ministry, certainly, and when it comes to normal people, people, you know, who are just going about their daily business, they're not making plans out of evil intentions or devious intentions. They have good intentions, goodwill behind their making of plans or even their breaking of plans. And so we should not attribute these to evil intent or to bad character. Even though this is a fairly minor issue, some people in the church made a big deal out of it. They seized upon this change of plan to criticize Paul for his supposed lack of good character. They accused him of being unreliable and fickle. That is, he vacillated. He went back and forth between one thing and another. Somebody put it this way. The Corinthians took advantage of Paul's change of plans to criticize him sharply for his vacillation and flippancy. How easy it is to find fault with the preacher. So Paul has to explain his conduct. And so likewise in our context today, it's easy to find fault with people in the church, the pastor, other members, other people. But constant fault finding is a good way to produce all kinds of problems in the church. And this is why Paul has to address this, because this constant fault finding is really a symptom of a deeper, more serious disease. When you have criticism and fault finding, it really can be very destructive. Some of you are aware of the situation of a local church not far from us up in Eagle River. Eagle River, some of us remember Greg Robati was the pastor there for several years, and because it was a small congregation, Greg had to work a part-time or almost full-time job in addition to pastoring the church. And Greg was able to lead the people from a very small, very inadequate building to a very nice building that they were able to convert and were using as the church. And things happened over the course of years and people became disgruntled, and I don't know all the details, but to me it was a great shame that essentially the people of the church there drove out their pastor because of lack, well, just criticism. Criticism of one thing or another, what I think of as relatively minor things, the people got all up in arms about and essentially drove out their pastor. And so now what do they have left? They have, I don't know, a dozen people with a nice big building and no pastor. And frankly, they should have been glad to have anybody who would work with that small congregation and be willing to work another job just so that he could be the pastor. And they got so upset about whatever minor things that he was doing that they essentially drove him out of there. So what's the upshot? Well, now they have a small group of people. They have a nice building with, I imagine, a pretty sizable mortgage and no pastor. And so now they have to try to get somebody in there every week to speak for them. Well, I don't criticize, or I imagine that there's good reasons that Greg felt like he had to leave there, because it became unsustainable. The people were so critical of him over what I think were minor issues that he just couldn't be there anymore. And sometimes minor things create such division and such criticism of people that they create all kinds of problems in the church and among the people in their relationships. There are other churches that I'm aware of in our state who are known for spitting out pastors one after the other. A guy will come in a good faith effort to lead the church. Maybe it's a church of 15, 20, 30 people. He'll come in there and enjoy the pastorate for maybe a year or two, and then all of a sudden everybody turns on the guy and they force him out. They drive him out, and then lo and behold, they're looking for another pastor. And they do that over and over again. The church has a reputation, a bad reputation, as the kind of church that just grinds up and spits out one pastor after another. Well, that's because of a critical spirit, usually of just a couple or maybe a handful of people in the church, who just will not be satisfied with anything other than perfection. Everybody in that church has to be perfect, and if it's not, they're going to be critical and against things that are happening there. And then they create a big problem, and it ends up being a big fiasco, and then they're down to a handful of people. So we need to recognize that critical spirit and how destructive it can be, and recognize that people are making plans and doing things in a good faith effort, and we need to not be so critical about small, minor, trivial issues that come about. Instead, try to be, you know, generous and kind and charitable, and recognize that nobody's perfect and everybody makes mistakes from time to time, and not drive people away instead of being kind and charitable. You know, in fact, later on in the letter, we find that Paul intentionally stayed away from the church because he was trying to avoid conflict. And sometimes we recognize that, yeah, people might stay away from our church because they know it's full of conflict. In some churches are like that. The church is so full of conflict, nobody wants to be there. I'm not saying our church is that way. I'm glad that our church is not that way. But there are churches that if everybody's focusing on minor, trivial things, little problems, little errors, the fact that people aren't perfect, all of a sudden that becomes a huge problem, and people push it far beyond what it needs to go, and then it becomes a big destructive issue in the church. So recognize there are good intentions involved in these things. Secondly, let's go on to number two, appreciate potential benefits. He says, I intended to come to you that you might have a second benefit, a second blessing. His plan was to visit the church twice, he says, once on the way to Macedonia, that he'd come in. He was in Asia Minor over by Ephesus. He would sail across to Corinth. He would spend some time with them. Then he'd go into Macedonia to the north. He'd spend some time in Macedonia, come back to them, and then sail away to Judea. So that was his plan, and have a second benefit or two benefits, two favors. This idea of benefit is often translated as grace. In fact, it's the same root word as grace or gift. In this context, he's talking about a benefit or a favor, and my sense is that he's saying that you will have an opportunity to participate in my ministry twice. I don't think he's saying it will be such a great benefit to you that I will be there with you two times. Wow, I'll be there and minister with you twice. Oh, great, big deal. The idea was that you'll be able to participate in my ministry twice, in that I'll visit with you and maybe you'll help me on my way to Macedonia. And then when I come out of Macedonia, you'll help me on my way back to Judea. So you'll have an opportunity to serve or to minister or to participate in this ministry twice. I think that's what he's getting at. You know, people sometimes ignore the benefits or blessings that would happen if a plan is carried out. All they can see is the problems associated with the plan. We should be a bit more optimistic and believing that those who are making this plan have a good intention involved, and that hopefully there's going to be a blessing as part of it. So sometimes plans have to change, even like in the context of the church. We produce a monthly calendar, we produce a yearly calendar, and generally speaking, when we have things, when I put something on the calendar, I'm reluctant to change it because I want people to have reliability or to have confidence in the plans that we make. And if we're constantly changing plans, you know, saying that we're going to do this and then we change the plan and do something different, well, then everybody's uncertain as to what we're going to do. But sometimes it's necessary to make changes in our plans, right? That happens as a church because things happen differently. Things happen in the world and we need to respond to them. And most of us probably recognize that even in our own lives, we need to change plans from time to time. How many of you changed plans because of the whole COVID situation over the last couple of years? How many things had to be switched in your agenda in order to deal with the issues of COVID? How many times perhaps you had planned on a vacation, or maybe planned on grandparents coming over, or planned on coming or going or doing one thing or another, and you had to change your plans because either COVID came up, or people got sick, or people couldn't travel, or whatever it might be? These kinds of things happen. That's life, right? So to get all up in arms because somebody had to change his or her plans just is unreasonable. The point is that minor trivial changes can lead to major issues if we're not careful. If the issue revolves around a change of plans, well, something like that, we should certainly see that as a minor thing. Our standard default position is that we keep the minor things minor and we keep the major things major. If something is a trivial issue, well, don't allow it to be blown all out of proportion. And then thirdly this morning, as we go on to verse 17, therefore, when I was planning this, did I do it lightly? Or did the things I plan, do I plan according to the flesh, that with me there should be yes, yes, and no, no? So here I think we have Paul responding to three accusations against him. In each one of these accusations, Paul is trying to explain that really their thinking about him was improper and wrong. They didn't understand. And just like in that play, Shakespeare's play, Much Ado About Nothing, there's a lot of misunderstanding going on that is resolved by the end of the play. And Paul now is trying to resolve these misunderstandings about him. There was good reason that he did what he did regarding changing his plans. One of the writers put it this way, someone in Corinth seized upon his postponed visit and blew it out of proportion. They recast his failure to come into a breach of promise, giving it the worst possible interpretation. And I think we really need to guard against giving things the worst possible interpretation, seeing things in the worst possible light. Most of the time, people are operating in good faith. They are trying their best. If we become critical of people for trivial reasons, well, then that will have a major bad effect, a destructive effect on our relationships. Instead, we ought to trust people that they are acting in good faith and for good reason. So notice these accusations that Paul responds against. First, the first accusation here is that the decision was made lightly. He says in verse 17, therefore, when I was planning, did I do it lightly? The word here means literally with levity, that is to be fickle, to be vacillating, capricious, or unstable. To be light in character meant to be selfish or unconcerned about the needs of other people. To make a decision lightly was to behave irresponsibly, to do things lightly or to do things frivolously or casually or without thought. In other words, it was insincere or inconsiderate. Paul made these plans without considering the outcome of these things. That was the accusation. So Paul says, did I do it that way when I'm making these plans, when I had to change my plans? Did I do it just frivolously, just lightly, without thought? And obviously the expected answer is no. Paul had put a lot of thought and foresight into this plan. He wasn't being inconsiderate. He wasn't being unstable. He changed his plans because he thought it would be in the best interests of everybody involved. Well, we all have to change our plans, as I said, from time to time. We may be disappointed when our plans don't work out, but we recognize that changing of plans is part of life. Trivial issues are made much worse when we start throwing accusations like this around. Oh, he or she is only doing this because they're inconsiderate of other people. Well, frankly, we don't know why, normally speaking, we don't know why people do the things that they do unless, of course, they tell us. But oftentimes, we simply look at behavior and we think that we know why people are doing other things. Do you have the ability to read someone else's heart? Now, the Bible says we can certainly look at other people's behavior, but we don't know necessarily what motivates that behavior. And so when we impugn or mischaracterize other people or criticize others based on the fact that we think we know what's going on in their gray cells, we are making a huge mistake. You know, half the time I don't know what's going on in my gray cells. So for anybody else to say that they know what's going on in my head, they have more information than I do. Only God and I suppose, and maybe if I tell my wife, oftentimes we're the only ones who really know what's happening or why we're doing things. So for anybody to say, oh, he or she only did this because they think that, well, how do you know that? Did they tell you that? Oftentimes we jump to conclusions about the things that people do and we think that we know why they're doing them. That is really being judgmental. That is, frankly, thinking that you know something about somebody that you really don't know that about. So these people were saying that about Paul. Oh, he's being inconsiderate. He's not even taking into consideration our needs when he's making these plans, when he's changing plans. And Paul is saying, no, I didn't do it just frivolously or casually. I took everything into consideration when I made these plans. The second accusation here is that the decision was made, as he says, according to the flesh. Did I plan according to the flesh? Well, what does that mean? Flesh in the Bible, as we know, oftentimes it can refer to the physical body, but oftentimes it refers to the unsaved way of thinking, the old sinful nature. So selfishly or self-centeredly, when you operate according to the flesh, you're just following your own moods and inclinations, irrespective of how others might be effective. The word impulsively might describe this idea. Just according to your own feelings. You're not concerned about other people. You're just doing what you do out of your own feelings, your own whims and inclinations. So he made plans, according to the Corinthian accusation here, just without considering how it might impact other people. And so Paul, again, denies that he made plans selfishly, self-centeredly, or without considering the needs of others. He was not merely fulfilling his personal appetites, moods, or desires when he made this plan. In fact, we find out later in the book that Paul changed his plan for the benefit of the people there at the church. The reason that he changed his plan was to benefit them, as he mentions, a second benefit. He thought it would be more beneficial if he followed this other plan. In fact, he goes on to talk about the fact that the previous time that he had been there, he mentions his visit as severe or harsh, and he didn't want to repeat that. That's one of the reasons that he's writing this letter, is to prepare the people for his third visit with them. He had a short visit that apparently went pretty badly. The people did not respond well. He calls that a harsh or a severe visit, and he's holding back in coming again because he doesn't want to repeat that. So again, he's doing that. He goes on to say, I did that to spare you. There's a good reason that he is changing his plans here, and it's for the benefit of the church, because he doesn't want to come in as another severe disciplinarian and deal with all the issues in the church. He wants to give the church the opportunity to deal with those issues themselves and clear things up and take care of their problems before he comes and has to be the schoolmaster to clear up all their issues and deal with all their disciplinary issues. So really, it's for the benefit of the people. It's not just out of his own feelings about this. You know, if you want to damage a relationship, just start making accusation about the other person's character. Just assume that the other person is acting out of selfishness without regard for anyone else. Well, that's a very good way to destroy a relationship, thinking that you know why the person is doing something and it's only because of selfishness and inconsideration. Instead, our default attitude should be that people probably, mostly, act out of good reasons with good intent. So until proven otherwise, we should assume that people have your best interests in mind. They're trying their best, and we should not question their motives and their good character. And then the third accusation here, notice at the end of verse 17, with me that there should be yes, yes, and no, no. Now, one of the reasons that 2 Corinthians is a difficult book to interpret is expressions like this. What in the world does Paul mean by yes, yes, and no, no? We should remember that Jesus said, let your yes be yes and your no be no. So this is probably a reflection of what Jesus had said, and it seems likely that Paul had taught the people that we ought to be honest and sincere and non-hypocritical in how we speak. And probably Paul had taught Jesus' statement here, Jesus saying about let your yes be yes and your no be no. And so now the people are turning around and saying Paul is unstable because he says one thing and he writes something else and he does something entirely different. So he's unreliable. He's unstable. His character is questionable because we can't rely upon him. That seems to be the accusation. He's fickle, unstable, and unreliable. In other words, they're accusing him really of being dishonest, saying one thing and doing something else. And the doubling of the word here seems to be for emphasis. He's always doing this kind of thing. You know, we've known Paul for a while, and it seems like he's always changing his plans. He's always doing things that have a negative repercussion for other people. Well, notice verse 18 where Paul says, as God is faithful, our word to you was not yes and no. So Paul flatly denies this accusation. He says, no, our preaching to you was not speaking out of both sides of your mouth. Our proclamation to you was honest. It was sincere according to God's word. He asserts that the preaching was not yes and no. His message was not contradictory or unreliable. He was not being fickle or irresponsible. In fact, later on, of course, he tells them that this was really for their benefit. Another way of causing conflict is to accuse someone of always doing something or never doing something. Sometimes in marital stress or marital conflict, somebody comes up and says to the spouse, you always do that. You're always leaving that door open. You're always leaving the lights on. Those always and never statements are usually never true because people don't always do it that way. And it's a way of criticizing the other person by saying that they do this a lot, and it seems like that's what they're doing here. But that's another good way to tear down and ruin relationships. It's a hypercritical kind of an attitude that notices every little thing and then exalts it or promotes it to this level that it becomes a huge issue, a huge problem. Some people simply are looking for faults and failures that they can highlight. Criticizing others somehow makes them feel better about themselves. And so if you want to make a small, trivial issue into a big one, well then do what the people at Corinth were doing, accusing someone acting in good faith of irresponsibility, immorality, and inconsideration. Accuse people of having a bad character, and that's exactly the wrong way to handle minor issues. So if you want to avoid making much ado about nothing, then don't make rash, unreasonable, false accusations. Don't put the worst possible spin on things. Don't assume that you know why people are doing what they do. Give other people the benefit of the doubt and don't jump to unwarranted conclusions. Well, I think that's where we'll stop this morning. We could go on with a passage, and Lord willing, we'll go on with that passage next week. But I think we'll stop right there. But just to review, the people of Corinth were offended over a very small, trivial issue. They made outlandish claims against Paul, who is in reality acting in good faith. They were making a mountain out of a molehill. They were making much ado about nothing. And so when trivial issues become big issues, it's usually because of a series of misunderstandings. And it usually begins with assumptions made about someone's motivations. We should assume the best about people and not blow things all out of proportion. Let's let the trivial things remain trivial. If we retain a critical, fault-finding attitude, it will damage our relationships and weaken the church. Well, let's close in prayer.